Imagine waking up tomorrow to discover that everyone treats you completely differently than they did today. Your family acts as if you're a stranger, colleagues doubt your competence, and friends respond to you with suspicion rather than warmth. How long would it take before you began questioning your own identity? This scenario illuminates the radical premise at the heart of Stanford professor Brian Lowery's groundbreaking work. There is no authentic self waiting to be discovered because we are entirely created through our relationships with others. The quest to find yourself misses the fundamental truth that yourself isn't something you uncover. It's something continuously constructed through social interaction. In a world obsessed with individual authenticity, this perspective challenges our most cherished assumptions. We experience ourselves as coherent, autonomous beings, a little you managing the controls of your life. Yet this intuitive understanding crumbles under scrutiny. The person you become when hanging out with college friends differs fundamentally from who you are in professional settings or family gatherings. These aren't masks you wear, they're different versions of you activated by social context. What if the self isn't something you possess, but something perpetually created between you and others? We consistently overestimate our autonomy while underestimating how social forces shape us. When you think, "I love my partner," you're interpreting physical signals through cultural frameworks that existed before you. Who we love, what we consider right or wrong, and our food preferences reflect our social environment rather than some independent essence. Throughout history, thinkers have explored the self's origins. Cooley described the looking glass self, formed by how others see us, while Mead argued the self develops through social interaction. Evidence consistently points to our fundamentally social nature. In every interaction, others reflect their view of you, not a true representation, but a construction filtered through their perspective, which you help create. We see ourselves reflected in those surrounding us. The boundary between yourself and others isn't clear-cut. When I suggest wiggling your finger and you consider it, I've momentarily shaped yourself. We all possess multiple selves. Parent, child, employee, athlete, lover, each defined by relationships and contexts. Which emerges depends on circumstances, location, company, and time of day. These identities can conflict in ways that affect our behavior without our awareness. Identity activation shapes performance. When Asian American women were prompted to identify as Asian American before a math test, they performed better than when identifying as women first. This wasn't conscious strategy, but automatic response to whichever identity was made salient. As social creatures, we navigate expectations based on our various roles. Our interactions constantly remake us, from a partner's comment affecting work confidence to cultural norms determining personal space. We need both structure to function and freedom to feel alive, a tension defining the human condition. There isn't a true self waiting inside you. You're the product of your social world. Parents, friends, institutions, and cultural materials shape what you can conceive. Changing your circumstances requires collective effort because we create others as they create us. We don't perceive reality objectively, but construct it for effective navigation. When uncertain, we seek structure. Gestalt psychology shows we perceive meaningful holes rather than discrete elements, filling gaps to create coherence. Research demonstrates we perceive what makes sense to us, not what's actually presented. Study participants reported seeing blocks move according to expected physical laws, even when shown sequences violating those laws. With limited information, we use shortcuts to create predictable structures. We categorize people into groups and extend assumptions about some members to all. These stereotypes provide navigational structure, but often mislead us, like assuming a young black man is a valet or a woman pouring coffee is a secretary. We cling to these stories not for accuracy, but for comfort. As sense-seeking creatures, we require coherent maps of the world with places for ourselves within them. A person with purely personal beliefs is considered insane, while shared beliefs gain legitimacy through collective acceptance. Our self and sense of reality are collective constructions, not objective truth. Freedom extends beyond the absence of external constraints. Even without outside influences, determining what you want is complicated by our contradictory desires, like wanting to eat when hungry while also wanting to diet. External constraints range from obvious, police limiting movement, to subtle, disrespect creating fear. Between 2002 and 2019, over 5 million people were stopped and searched in New York City, with more than 90% being innocent, each stop removing someone's freedom to walk without harassment. Which self determines our freedom? As a son, I might need to show deference to my mother, while as a man, I might need to stand up for myself. We don't choose which self we inhabit. Social situations elicit particular selves, and we respond to the context. Social connection is fundamental to humanity. Studies show that when excluded, we see both ourselves and those who excluded us as less human. After rejection, we're more likely to conform to group opinion, even giving incorrect answers to fit in. We adjust our interests, speech patterns, and body language to connect with others, creating shared reality while limiting our freedom. When we conform to gender norms, we're essentially requesting treatment based on established social identities that predate us, identities we learn through observation and socialization. The 1968 Memphis sanitation worker strike, where black men carried signs reading, "I am a man," demonstrated that manhood requires social recognition beyond biology. Similarly, transgender athletes face rejection despite their gender identity, with opponents using biological arguments. These examples show that while we can assert our identities, they ultimately depend on others' acceptance. Though some believe biological sex determines gender identity, the Memphis example proves biology alone isn't sufficient for gender recognition. Being a real man or woman means meeting social expectations that vary across cultures and time. Many people experience a mismatch between their internal identity and others' recognition of it. This disconnect underlies the movement to state preferred pronouns, which separates appearance from identity recognition, though this requests inclusion in the correct category rather than abolishing gender concepts altogether. Understanding yourself as a social creation has profound implications. Our freedom has constraints, yet this limitation is actually comforting, as unlimited choice is less satisfying than we imagine. Power exists not just in controlling resources, but in everyday interactions where we affirm or challenge other selves. Even small interactions like withholding a good morning affects both parties, denying recognition of someone's humanity while missing affirmation of your own. Communities confer identities, giving them tremendous power. Politicians exploit this by rallying people around shared identity against perceived enemies, knowing the fight for identity is existential. Yourself isn't an unchanging essence imparted at birth. Your DNA isn't destiny. We are mirrors reflecting each other, collectively creating who we are and can become. This perspective extends our responsibility. We're accountable not just for ourselves, but for the selves we help create in others. In recognizing this interconnection, we find both humility about our independence and wonder at our power to shape the world through our interactions.